Friday. It's power time. Drop it. All right, power panel. Francesca Fiorentini is here. She's the host of Newsbroke on AJ Plus. That's their comedy channel. How you doing, Francesca?
Pretty good.
It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back. Gosh, what has happened since I was last here? Those were the days.
They came out with another Fast and Furious movie.
Hey,
it's exciting.
That's been good.
Yeah. Not much else.
Yeah. Well, actually, our whole lives have been one big Fast and Furious movie.
Mostly Furious.
Yes.
Rock 2020.
Yeah.
The Rock.
Don't get that started again. People get pissed.
Okay, right.
Okay, and as you can tell, John Iadarola is also here. Anyways, I have exciting news for you guys. So let's come to me for a second and let me tell you guys. Boy, do we have interesting news for you. Next week on the Young Turks, Senator Joe Manchin. That ought to be interesting. So I'm going to tell you when you can watch it live. And then obviously we'll put it up for everybody a little bit later. It's live at 11:15 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday morning. So if you're a member, members watch all the interviews live, and then don't worry, everybody gets to see them all, but it takes a little while to edit, etc., and put them up later. But if you're a member, you can watch it live as it goes down, tweet it, whatever, etc., at 11:15 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday morning, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia on the Young Turks. Okay. And obviously on our regular show at 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern that day, we'll also have clips from that interview up that we could talk about. Also later in the week, Keith Ellison will be on the program. That is on Friday, next Friday at 1 o'clock Eastern. Members will be able to watch that live as well. Oh, by the way, how do you get membership? TYTnetwork.com/join. And don't worry, this month it's actually free. So you get a month of membership free if you sign up before July 28th. The way you do that is you use the promo code FREETYT. So if you want to watch the Manchin interview live or the Ellison interview live, just go to TYTnetwork.com/join and put the promo code FREETYT in there and you'll be able to do that. I have no idea how that interview is going to go, but it would be shocking if it wasn't fascinating. Right? It is bound to be interesting, no matter which direction it goes.
One of the cool things about you debating Joe Manchin is that there's going to be these two sides, you and Joe, and like, you know, fierce debate. And normally he's going to be on this one side, but randomly he might switch over if there's a chance to screw over the American people. So he might help you in the debate.
So that is your take on it, and maybe it'll be perfectly great, and we'll agree on things. And he'll say, you know what, Jake, I wanted to come on the Young Turks to tell you that I'm for Medicare for all. I don't know. He asked for the interview, so. He asked for it.
He's trying to reach your audience.
Yes. Fascinating. Fascinating. I don't know what's going to happen.
So is it a debate or is it an interview?
No, it's an interview. It's an interview.
Okay.
We don't often agree.
Yeah.
So it might devolve into a debate, but it's an interview. I'm going to ask some questions. He's going to answer.
Is there any chance that mid-interview, Paula Jean Swearengin runs in with a steel chair?
No chance.
No.
No.
Damn.
That is a different fight in a different venue.
Okay. I guess we can.
This
wait.
Is a conversation.
After. Those are the memes that come out after.
Fascinating stuff, so don't miss any of that. Okay, now we got a lot of news for you guys today, so Francesca, take it away.
There is so much to get to, so bear with me also. This is my first time.
Woo!
Ow! Thank you. Who's that? Oh, cool. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin met today in Hamburg, Germany, along with the G20 summit, of course. No media was present except for some photographers in the beginning. So all we know is what Sergey Lavrov, the Russian ambassador, and Rex Tillerson have to tell us. And so far, they have said that Syria was discussed and that apparently Russian meddling in the 2016 election was discussed. Now, also, the meeting went on for 2 hours and 15 minutes when it was, I think scheduled for a lot less. Apparently, Melania Trump came in and had to interrupt the meeting, and she was quickly rushed away. But according to what Tillerson told the Times about this meeting, he says that Donald Trump began by raising the concern of the American people of Russian interference in the 2016 election, and that he pressed him more than once. Right? Okay, so that's on one side. On the other side, Mr. Lavrov, right, the Russian prime minister, said that Trump conceded that, quote, certain circles, that the campaign had already taken on a rather strange character because over the many months that these accusations have been made, not a single fact has been presented, according to Lavrov. Then he said that President Trump said that he had heard the clear statements from President Putin about this being untrue, that the Russian leadership did not interfere in the election, and that he accepts these statements. That he, being Trump, accepts these statements. So on the one hand, Tillerson; on the one hand, Lavrov. Back to what I thought was a great quote from Tillerson, saying that pretty much, essentially, at the end, when it comes down to Russian meddling, that, quote, it may be simply an intractable disagreement at this point.
So that's super important. So let me give a little bit of context here. So first off, Lavrov, the foreign minister in Russia,
right,
also, of course, is going to do propaganda. So I know some on the right and some on the left here in America say, oh, the US government does propaganda. First of all, congratulations, you just figured it out. Yes, of course we do, right? But that doesn't mean that everybody else is full of roses and rainbows. The Russians also do propaganda. So I wouldn't go and trust necessarily what Lavrov is saying about what Trump said, which is, oh, all is forgiven, don't worry about it. I'm not holding you against that, you know, not holding that against you at all, right? Which I wouldn't be surprised if Trump said it, but that's Lavrov saying Trump said it,
right.
So take it with a giant grain of salt, right? But I think the most important part is Tillerson. So first off, this is all being presented as super important because Trump, as Tillerson pointed out, raised the issue of the Russian meddling in the beginning and did it twice. Mm-hmm. So what? Like that, like David Gergen, there they go again on CNN saying he seemed presidential today. How many times are they going to declare him president? First of all, he is president, whether we like it or not. Second of all, stop saying the most mundane things. Now have made him president, right?
At least they've made him modern day presidential.
Yes, and so it's not, look, I mean, sometimes it's he ate a bologna sandwich and so he looked presidential today eating that bologna sandwich. But most of the time it's more warlike things. He bombed Syria, now he's presidential. He threatened the Russians, so now he's presidential.
But it's not even a threat, it's a minimal defense of American sovereignty. And American democracy. Like, hey, remember that thing? And, you know, remember the, you know, dozen officials that came out saying that you actually hacked the election and, you know, voter rolls were compromised. Remember that thing? Don't do that. And, you know, oh, no, cool. Yeah, well, never would have, like, I'm backing off. Like, that's not presidential at all.
Well, and also Tillerson saying that it's sort of like an intractable disagreement. And so, I mean, I guess we'll move on to other things. What are you talking about?
No, that's the essence of it.
What are you talking
about? That's the essence of it. So when the Gergens of the world say on CNN, quote, this is presidential, that's his second time saying it. This was big league stuff. No, it wasn't. So when he says, oh, I raised the issue of the meddling, and then Tillerson comes out and says, well, we raised it and we couldn't find an answer, so we're now going forward and we're done with it. The reality of that news story is not that he raised the issue, it's that they closed the issue. They said, okay, we mentioned it once, now he did help us, so we don't care. We're done with it. There's no sanctions, there's no consequences, there's nothing. In fact, what we did was the opposite. We agreed to a ceasefire in Syria. I'm happy with the ceasefire, but it does cement Bashar Assad's lead at this point, which is what Putin wanted. So there was no consequences to the meddling. Stop giving Trump credit for that when in fact you're playing into his hands. This is exactly what he wanted to do, window dressing and no substance at all.
It's embarrassing, can I say embarrassing? I mean, and you know, I've never been more patriotic than I have been in the last 6 months, I gotta tell you. But I think something that would have been presidential is like, and we're, you know, creating even just a shell of accountability. Maybe like a, you know, some kind of investigation, a joint investigation, how about, into, you know, potential meddling, or how we can talk about cybersecurity. You know, just throw the American people a bone, right? There's no bones being thrown. There is no attempt at covering this up. It's just what I heard from Tillerson is, you know, play Adele's Water Under the Bridge, because that is exactly what this is going to be pretty soon.
Yeah, and so one other thing that sort of came up during this meeting as a continuation of one of my biggest concerns from his trip to Europe so far. I know that in the production meeting you mentioned in his speech in Poland, there were these strong sort of authoritarian, like nationalist statements he was making, very scary stuff. But also in the press conference there, he repeatedly, as he has been doing for months now, attacked the press. I know some people want to just lay down and let him do that and not worry about it. But he's continuing to do it, and he's doing it with other right-wing leaders around the globe. And in the meeting today, Vladimir Putin clearly knows that, because at one point he apparently leaned over and said something to the effect of, are those the ones that insulted you, talking about reporters? It had to be translated to Trump, but Trump sort of laughs. This guy who also shuts down the free press thinks it's funny. But what's more interesting about that interaction is this guy Jules, who worked with Seeker, I'm not sure if he still works at Seeker, that he said that the particular word that Vladimir Putin used for insulted there is the one you would use for a child whose feelings have been hurt. And I thought, well, that's too good to be true. But we had Mary, our Russian speaking editor, check, and she said, yes, that is the form of insult you would use if you wanted to sort of condescend and speak down to a child. Like, oh, you got a boo-boo. That's what Vladimir Putin said to Donald Trump.
Well, to be fair, he's just speaking his language. Yeah. So that Trump understands what he's saying.
Sad.
But to the interpreter point, another really important point that is being not emphasized enough in this interaction. So it's meant to be short, as Francesca pointed out, half an hour or so. Winds up being 2 hours and 15 minutes. There's only 6 people in the room. Mm-hmm. So it's Trump and Tillerson, both huge allies of Russia in the past. Trump has had a tremendous amount of financial dealings. His sons say they got all the money for their golf course, et cetera, from the Russians. And obviously throughout has been saying very publicly, oh, this whole thing's overblown. There is no such thing as a Russia thing, et cetera. Rex Tillerson, when he was the CEO of ExxonMobil, had a $500 billion deal with the Russians. Okay, on their side, they have just Putin and Lavrov, their foreign minister. And then the other two people in the room are the interpreters who will soon wind up dead. Now, okay, if what happened to the Russian ambassadors, three diplomats throughout the world is any indication, I'm obviously kind of kidding about that. Okay, so, but my point is, these are all people that if there was a deal with the Russians, are in on the deal. There was no one allowed in the room that was not in on the deal. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that for certain, of course, and I don't know to what degree Tillerson knows, you know, what Trump had in the history with Russia. When Trump's making deals for golf courses back in 09, etc., Tillerson's not involved in that. So I, of course, this part of what I'm saying is to some degree speculation. But we do know there was nobody in the room that if they had said something about, hey guys, this is how we'll actually handle it, that would have said, whoa, wait a minute, what do you mean actually handle it? Mm-hmm. Like, these are all guys who stand to gain from lifting the Russian sanctions. And they all were in the room and they come out and say, oh boy, we were tough on one another, mm-hmm. but I've decided that it's water under the bridge and we're done with it and we're moving forward.
And apparently the Russians even wanted more officials in the room, but couldn't, the Americans couldn't agree on how many or who, and they all, everyone wants to prevent leaks, right? Of course, in this administration, more than one person in a room is a leak. Trump is his own personal leaker. He says 5 different things to 5 different people, you know. So, but I, leading up to this, you know, really hyped up meeting, which of course it is, there was that conversation of, well, who's going to be in the room, you know, and what kind of accountability is there going to be? And you're absolutely right. This is completely behind closed doors. I'd be more scared if, you know, Trump weren't such an idiot, back to what we all know.
Yeah, so God knows what he agreed to in that 2 hours and 15 minutes, and what parts are, you know, upfront and within his powers as the president and just policy setting, but are going to be bad for the country, we think, right? What did he allow Putin to do that's a bad idea? So that's the legit stuff. And God knows what's the illegit stuff. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Don't worry, Vlad. I'm gonna lift those same Rex and I. Why do you think Rex is in the room? I mean, he's literally the guy that had the deal with the Russians on that $500 billion oil deal that the sanctions blocked.
Yeah.
So we agree that we will be lifting the sanctions soon because of what you did for us. I don't know that they said that, but if they did, nobody would know outside the interpreters.
The Order of Friendship, also don't forget the Order of Friendship. Tillerson has that, the highest award from any non-Russian official.
Yeah. I'll tell you this much right now. I wouldn't want to be those interpreters. Okay, and I'm granting you that this is, again, total speculation on the interpreter part. But if either one of them mysteriously dies soon, it's over. It's over. It means there is 1,000% a deal. And I don't ever want to hear anybody tell me there's no evidence.
Oh, they've got handwritten notes. They're furiously, copiously just writing everything down right now.
Copious notes, yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's do the Syria part.
Yeah, let's do the Syria part. You didn't want to talk about what Trump
rage
was
tweets?
Tweeting?
Sure, let's do that.
Because obviously, we're on a tweet bender, of course, once again. Trump tweeting from the G20. Everyone here is talking about why John Podesta refused to give the DNC server to the FBI and the CIA. Disgraceful. Because I think Theresa May definitely just rolled up and cool, cool, cool. You know, the EU is falling apart, but John Podesta.
Yeah. Trudeau wouldn't stop talking about it. Come on.
I was going to go with Macron. He comes in, he's like, now listen, remember the party that lost and is out of power and totally irrelevant now? I'd like to talk about one of their staffers.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was a conversation that was likely to happen.
And also, I'm sure that many people have seen the breakdowns of that tweet, but it's almost an exercise, just in case you haven't, of how many, I will say misunderstandings, but probably deceptions you can pack into just one tweet. Mm-hmm. Because he says there, why didn't John Podesta turn over the DNC servers? Apparently thinking that those are related things. John Podesta, first of all, doesn't have any authority to turn over the DNC servers. The DNC server hack is a separate hack from Podesta's emails being hacked. Trump maybe knows that, maybe doesn't even know that those are totally different things, and doesn't know that while the FBI did want to look at the DNC servers, the CIA had no part in that, of course. The entire thing is ridiculous, and then it's disgraceful.
Throw another acronym.
Exactly.
And by the way, Podesta doesn't work at the DNC.
That's the larger problem. The whole thing with the conspiracy theories about Seth Rich and stuff, it's like people who are talking about this stuff constantly and don't even have the most basic understanding. They're saying you guys think it's Russia? No, man, it was Seth Rich and he got murdered from it. That's how he was able to get these files from not only the place where he worked, but a bunch of places where he didn't work. And when the RNC was hacked into, he apparently had access to that too. People have no clue what they're talking about when they discuss these things. They just throw all of this stuff into one big pot and then pluck out whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. But they're not the president. This guy's the president.
Yes.
And to me, all those things he got wrong are, I guess, funny, morbidly funny, since he's the leader of the free world. But the one that's the most disturbing is he doesn't know that the CIA does not investigate things inside the United States. God damn, you're the president, man. You don't know what the CIA does? You have no idea what the CIA does. That's amazing.
Can we throw on the FDA? DEA, whatever. How come he's not acquiescing to them? Maybe a ray of small hope coming out of the G20 meeting between Russia and the United States. There has been an agreement for a ceasefire in Syria. It applies to part of southwestern Syria and it begins Sunday. We don't, again, have many more details on this, but what we know is from anonymous officials, apparently we're gonna have an actual announcement in the next couple of days. I just found a couple of these pieces of quotes interesting from some Syrian analysts. Andrew Tabler of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy said that the Assad, let's go to that slate. Yeah, the question now is whether Russia will be able to enforce the agreement on its Syrian and Iranian allies. That's not certain. Again, remembering that Russia and the United States are not Syria and Iran and ISIS and rebel forces and all of the other forces that are playing out inside the country. Another analyst, a former special advisor in Syria under President Barack Obama, had this to say, I thought was interesting, saying we've seen this before, referring to the so-called cessation of hostilities negotiated between then Secretary of State John Kerry and Russia's foreign minister Sergey Lavrov in February 2016. Because remember, this is not the first time. Of course, we know Trump will try and say it is. That ceasefire held for a week to 10 days and fell apart completely. So it is something potentially positive coming out of this newfound love between Putin and Trump, but the proof is actually on the ground in Syria, and there are way many more forces at stake here. And I don't know, what do y'all think?
So I have very mixed feelings about this, because on the one hand, I'm annoyed by it, because again, the media is missing the point here. So Trump and Putin have a meeting. Trump says, hey, you shouldn't have done the meddling. Then they say, okay, but we're done with it. There's gonna be no consequences to it at all. And we prefer not to investigate it. Wow, you were really tough on Putin. And then he turns around and says, now I'll give you exactly what you want. Your client state is winning right now. Bashar al-Assad's winning in Syria. We'll do a ceasefire that cements his lead. And by the way, the last time we did a ceasefire, Assad broke it the minute that he thought it was advantageous to him. And they had gotten 100 other opposition groups to actually live by the ceasefire, but Assad broke it when it was. So wait a minute, Putin got exactly what he wanted. So where's the part where they get punished? No. So far, Putin has gotten Trump to talk about how NATO is not that big a deal, and they're not doing enough, and it's outdated, etc. Has talked positively about Russia keeping the Ukraine. And now did this show thing where, I am going to be tough on Putin and bomb Assad's because he did the chemical weapons attack. Then that bombing was proven to not bomb any of the new planes. They had left some old planes in a hangar somewhere. They bombed them. They didn't even bomb the runway. So the very next day, Assad and the Russians could use that same runway. Now they come and turn around and go, we promise we won't hit Assad anymore. So Putin got everything he wanted. And look, it's hard for me to contain myself and not call the mainstream press stupid when they are out there going to, Trump was tough on Russia today. Well, then you don't understand anything. You don't understand the news at all. You should all immediately retire. But hold on, but the other part of it, the reason why I'm mixed on it is because it is good news that they did a ceasefire. 4 million people have left Syria. They're internally over 8 million are displaced. The war's a mess. And by the way, we should stop funding radical groups that are fighting Assad. Now, I'm no friend of Assad, and I've criticized him a billion times on the show. And I think he's done some terrible things. And I don't want Putin and Assad to gain an advantage. Having said all that, who are we giving weapons to? So Tulsi Gabbard makes a great point about this, and she's got a bill, by the way, a bipartisan bill, and Just Democrats are supporting it, justicedemocrats.com/SATA, Stop Arming Terrorists Act. Because you think when we give to those forces fighting Assad, that you're buying the myth that they're moderate radicals? Is that a thing? Like a moderate opposition to Assad? Maybe in the beginning, not maybe, definitely in the street protests, there were real moderates and real people who were secular. When the fighting began, there were some moderates left. Now, there are no moderates left. There's al-Nusra there that is connected to al-Qaeda. We're arming Sunni radicals. We gotta stop arming those guys. So if that's what this deal led to, as much as I'm annoyed by the wrong coverage of it and that Putin has in essence gotten what he wanted, I do agree that we should stop sending money and weapons to people who might very well use it against us later.
Well, I agree that the coverage is flawed in that way, but I also think that there's a lack of questioning some of the fundamentals here. So theoretically, we were able to get a ceasefire, which implies that there are dueling sides that need to come to some sort of agreement. And maybe you give a little bit, maybe I give a little bit. But I would question anyone watching this to explain what the strategic objective of Donald Trump in Syria is right now. I couldn't even necessarily explain what Obama's real objective was there. I mean, he would say that theoretically it'd be great if Assad was gone, but clearly he wasn't working towards that, sort of just rolling the dice on the rebel groups and thinking regardless of whether they end up being extremist or moderate, it's good to have them fighting him. But we never took a strong strong stance to actually get him out of power. Right. And then people, I think, just sort of assume as we transition over to it being the Donald Trump administration that, oh, I guess that theoretically he's against Assad too. But why are we assuming that at this point? I mean, clearly,
no, I don't think he is.
Clearly,
no,
he'd like to kill ISIS, I guess. But why are we assuming that it's a complicated negotiation with Russia to get a ceasefire? He might well support that regime.
But yeah. I mean, there's no a real ceasefire. I mean, it's so ridiculous to be negotiating on behalf of a bunch of in a proxy way negotiating a ceasefire. Mm. What was the conversation with Assad before this? What's been the conversation with Iran? What's been the conversation with rebel forces on the ground? I think if the United States and Russia had gone to out of those 2 hours and 15 minutes been like, hey, I'm gonna stop selling weapons, you're gonna stop selling weapons, you're gonna stop selling planes, cool. What? And guess what, we're gonna open, open our borders for a certain amount of refugees. Wow, wouldn't that have gone a long way for some kind of cessation of all this, of all the hostility? I mean, I think one potentially positive thing is if Russia can get Assad to stop the barrel bombing, right, the most egregious of all the, all the fighting, from the analysis I've read, it's like, that'd be good, just for a bit.
Cool. So that would be good for the Syrians, that would be good for, I think, American interests. But I'm with John, I don't know what Trump got for Trump interests. For Trump, it's not clear. I mean, he might want Assad to win. For all we know, he does want Assad to win based on his statements.
What is his stance on other dictators around the globe? Is he generally against them?
No.
Not in my experience.
But in this specific case, Trump is very close to Russia and has done pretty much everything they've asked on Ukraine, NATO, and now Syria. So why are we assuming that Trump got anything out of this deal? It seems like all he did was agree to everything Putin wanted.
Uh-huh. And not to mention Iran, I mean, this is the thing that's gonna come down the pike, right? The Iran deal is terrible, Well, this is a complete 180 when it comes to Iran. If you're gonna hate on Iran, then you also have to hate on Assad because they're pretty much allied, right? I mean, and again, I think our job as citizens and thinkers, right, is to pull these things apart. Obviously, that's not the same thing. And there were a lot of positives in the Iran deal. But that is where the rubber is gonna hit the road, is when I think Republicans are faced to really look at their policy in the Middle East when it comes to Iran. And yet, are they gonna, because what's Israel thinking right now? If the US is tilting more towards Assad, toward Iran, where's Saudi and all this? I mean, it's.
And I know where they are. And that's why it's a super interesting dynamic when you go behind the scenes, which of course, as usual, the mainstream media almost never ever does. So the reality is, the reason we're against Assad is not because we think he's a terrible dictator. You know who are also dictators and pretty terrible at it? Almost every leader in the Gulf who are our huge allies. They're all dictators. I mean, they're kings. I don't know if you know what a king is. It's a fucking dictator, okay? But we love those dictators. Are they great to their citizens? No, a lot of them are terrible to their citizens, let alone if you're a minority, let alone if you're in Yemen, okay, and what the Saudis do to them. But we have decided that we are part of the Sunni alliance, which is the Saudis, and Israel has decided that Iran, the Shia, are a bigger threat to Israel than the Sunnis are. So if you notice, Israel almost never fights against Al-Qaeda or ISIS, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS almost never attacks Israel. Now, I can't tell you all the reasons why that has worked out the way that it does. I do know that the Saudis and Israel generally have an alliance, and we're on that side. So if you don't know this, it is amazing, but the reality is that is also the side. ISIS is Sunni, Al-Qaeda is Sunni. By the way, just because they're Sunni doesn't mean they agree. Just because ISIS is Sunni and Saudi is Sunni doesn't mean that they all have the same agenda. But when we go, oh my God, ISIS is so terrible, ISIS and Iran. Wait. Those are two totally different sides. And in fact, we have picked the Sunni side and we're against Shia Iran. So.
And even more deliberately in the last month, right? Even more in terms of Saudi Arabia's isolation of Qatar, where we have a base. Yeah. The United States has a base. So anyway.
So just to close that loop, because what you're saying is very relevant, Francesca, is that normally the US government and what some would call the deep state is on the Sunni side. That's the Saudi side, which is linked to Israel, and that has been where our interests are, and against Iran, and hence their client state Syria. So that's the Russian, Syrian, Iran side. We're on this side, right? But now Trump is saying, "Nah, I'm not sure I like Qatar, which is on the Sunni side." Huh? Interesting. And I'm going to agree to stop fighting Assad, which is on this side. Why? Because Trump, and this is part of why the deep state hates him, and why there's a huge movement on the right wing that doesn't like Trump, because Trump is not on the same side historically that the Republicans and the government have been on, which is Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the Sunnis. He is going over to the other side and going Assad, and hence Syria, and hence Iran, not so bad. So that is a very interesting dynamic that almost no one talks about.
I think the one thing that's gonna come out of this for sure, right, is that this was a win for Trump. Presidential by talking about hacking and meddling, and then a huge win because we got a ceasefire.
Yeah,
by just completely acquiescing to Putin and Russia's demand.
That could be. The problem is that theoretically that ceasefire can end, and an act of violence that would have otherwise just been another Syrian attack will now become a ceasefire breaking act of violence, thus making more news and possibly hurting Trump more if he's the guy that supposedly got us this amazing ceasefire.
Okay, super last thing. Yeah. So Trump goes to Russia, I'm sorry, goes to the G20 meeting, meets with Russia.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right, that'll come later. Anyway, right before the handcuffs on a plane to Russia. Anyway, and yesterday there was in the news that, so as they agree to a deal about the ceasefire in Syria, the one guys that they will continue to attack is ISIS. Both the Russians and us and everybody else will still be attacking ISIS. There's a news story that Trump decided to not reveal his plan on fighting ISIS, which he was set to do now, because in the midst of these conversations about what are we gonna do with Syria and ISIS, et cetera, because they realized it was nearly identical to Obama's plan.
Oops.
And they were about to release it. They're like, okay, you fight with our local allies on the ground and give them this and that. And oh no, this is Obama's plan.
Oh, we can't do this.
Yeah, and by the way, what happened to Trump's secret plan for ISIS?
That he already had.
He theoretically already had it. Why didn't he have it release it on day one? Because he never had it. Because he lied about that just like he lied about everything. So there's no secret plan to fight ISIS. There's no secret plan to, oh, we'll beat them so fast it'll make your head spin. Well, we haven't beaten them yet, right? You've been in office for quite some time and you just realize your plan is identical to Obama's. By the way, one of the reasons is, because the generals drew up the plan. Remember the generals that he lambasted throughout the primaries? Oh, we're not winning with these generals. These generals are losers. We're not winning with them. And now the reports are Trump, when asked what his plan is, said, I don't know. James Mattis, General James Mattis, now the Secretary of Defense, he's the one who should make the plan. I don't have a plan. What happened to your secret plan?
What about just like the meme army? What about his troll army? Release that on ISIS. Just put ISIS flag instead of the CNN flag. Done, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, body slam them at a WrestleMania, and I think we should be done with it.
And all those alt-right guys are such tough guys. They love talking about how badasses they are and these white Christian warriors. Why don't you go over there and take care of that big issue?
Yeah. Mm. Besides which, your MAGA emperor or whatever you guys call him, he has a great secret plan to defeat him. Wouldn't it be amazing if you guys executed that plan? Go get him, big guys.
They're not ready yet.
Okay.
It's not big. Okay, well, that was all what was happening inside the G20. Outside the G20, protests raged on today. 10,000 protesters took the streets of Hamburg in opposition to inequality, global capitalism, Trump. Maybe their first time to do so. Last night's protest was called Welcome to Hell. Lovingly titled. Protests were nonviolent, but also violent. Of course, this is a classic example. Police are blaming protesters, protesters blaming police. People say clashes. 20,000 police were deployed to Hamburg. Protesters were met with water cannons and tear gas. And so far, 83 people have been arrested. 17 have been detained. One activist told the New York Times, I thought this was good, we were promised a festival of democracy and what we're living through is a civil war on our streets. I think a lot of that was from Christoph Klein. I think there were protesters who went there to actually voice their opposition, others maybe to start a couple bonfires. But outside there were definitely people's voices being heard and saying that the G20 needs to represent the people of Europe, the people of the world.
Yeah.
So this made me realize how different Europe is than the US. Now, of course, I already knew that, but it is like when you get into the details, it's fascinating. First of all, 111 officers injured and dozens of protesters as well. In the US, that is not how the proportion would go.
No.
If there were two officers injured, there would be hundreds of protesters injured and arrested. 17 detained when 111 officers were injured.
Yeah.
They were throwing firebombs, right? The protesters were some. Again, there's Black Bloc and there's the guys who are ruining the peaceful protests. Most of the protesters were wonderfully peaceful, etc. But some were not and smashed windows, etc.
Sure.
Now, yes, the police had water cannons, pepper spray, billy clubs. They did have all that. But in the US, this is not how it would have gone down. And I know some right wingers celebrate that. They're like, oh yeah, we would have cracked their skulls and ended these democratic protests so quick, it would have made your head spin or your head crack. So
by design.
Yeah, and so that's a little different. And then the protesters, there's 160 different groups that are protesting and they're all progressive. And they have socialists among them. They have all these different groups among them that again in America would have been characterized as like, oh my God, these guys and look at them. And one of them threw a firebomb, that's it. They're all terrorists, etc. Meanwhile, the German government's like, no, we're trying to give them as much room as possible to protest to show people like Turkey and Russia that you could have protests in a democracy and not arrest all of your political opponents, which is a wonderful idea and why I get more pissed at the people who cause violence inside the protests. And meanwhile, the protesters say, look, Hamburg is a very progressive city. And so this was an act of aggression by the government to even have the G20 meeting here.
Right.
Again, topsy turvy, there is no, like in the American media, no one frames the government as the aggressors, right? And the protesters as the innocent ones. It's almost always the reverse. It's an act of aggression by the protesters when the government can obviously do whatever they want. It's almost as if the people in Germany can hold their government accountable. And so it's freaking me out.
Yeah. I just want to say also though that when you, I mean, it's like the conventions here, it's like any major protest that happens in the US. I think maybe the last one I saw that was an exception to this was the Women's March. But when you deploy 20,000 police officers, it is, I would say, already quite militarized, right? And as a peaceful protester, I've been there, you're staring down a riot cop, right? You're just trying to walk, and that it's almost like they're preparing for and slash know that they want to, you know, that the cops want to start something, you know. And I think some of the images I've been seeing, and I know there are protesters who throw, you know, whether you consider throwing a smoke bomb back, or excuse me, a tear gas canister back, an act of aggression is up to you. But you know, the images that struck me the most were seeing lines of nonviolent demonstrators sitting down and just water cannons, you know, stuff that we saw at Standing Rock and things like this. And I think that the nonviolent protesters are one that kind of scram later on when Black Bloc comes out and starts getting a little more violent. But
And necessarily the numbers are always going to appear when you see the footage, like even the footage we just showed would give you the idea that there's a lot of water cans, a lot of smoke, a lot of fire. And there's some of that, but we're talking about tens of thousands of people protesting theoretically. And so it's just the nature of the media that they're always going to make it seem far worse than it was. And in the American context, it'd be even worse. That's the only info you'd ever get about this protest would be those attacks.
I just want to say that the thing that we need to remember about protests around global capitalism is that before you had the anti-globalists, before you had the Alex Joneses, before you had Donald Trump saying, I hate free trade, there were young people in the streets protesting the G20, the World Economic Forum, the World Trade Organization, the biggest one and the one that started it all was in Seattle in 1999, right? I just want to say that Donald Trump didn't start the anti-free trade movement. Alex Jones didn't start this anti-globalist, you know, which is a super reactionary response to what 20 years ago almost, young people, labor union organizers, climate justice organizers back in the day were out there on the streets saying, hey, these economic free trade agreements do not benefit us. And guess what? They were met with repression then. What happened? 9/11. We've completely made a right turn. George Bush. So just to say, remember, look back in history that like these protests have been going on. Europe has been a site of some of the strongest protests against, you know, free market capitalism just sort of running amok, not thinking about workers' rights, human rights. Let's remember that when Trump says he's the only one standing up against free trade, because the reality is otherwise.
And let's also remember that he said he would get rid of NAFTA. As far as I know, NAFTA's still in place.
Right.
So didn't deliver on that either. And lastly, I don't want to over-romanticize either the German government and their response or their protesters. So bad stuff has happened on both sides, no question about it. Just a little different context than what you would see here in the US, which leads me to my final point, which is that one of the groups, and you saw their sign there, is Alles für allen. That means everything for everyone. Now, that's the kind of progressive movement in Germany and in Europe that's perfectly acceptable. They probably don't even know what I'm referring to. Like, yeah, everything for everyone. Mm-hmm. In America, they'd be like, oh, liberal, socialist, communist, everything for everyone. No way. Everything for the very few who are super rich.
If you ask, if you ask for a dollar more than minimum wage, they pitch you as the everything for everyone party.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we've got more amazing news for you guys, including the fight back here in America led by Bernie Sanders. Ooh, interesting. Why did he go to Kentucky and whose ass did he kick? All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Francesca, and John DFC writes in, fuck yes, hell fucking yes. Early off work, free TYT trial, and Francesca is on TYT Live. What? Today's fantastic. I like how excited you are, DFC. Okay, all right. Anyway,
that stands for did fucking cocaine.
Oh, did it?
I'm really excited now.
So excited! Fridays are great. Every day is great. Woo!
Have I mentioned the free trial? So tytnetwork.com/join to get that free trial. Use promo code FREETYT. Check out Joe Manchin's interview live if you're a member. He'll be on the Young Turks at 11:15 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday morning. Don't miss that, all you members. And then Chase Ibanez writes in, if Francesca is on TYT, should we call it a power panel plus?
See, I read that as an insult. Mm-hmm. I just saw, should we call it a power panel? I'm like, I'll pack my bag.
And I read it as like power panel plus, like what, on steroids? And I was like, oh no, AJ plus, I get it.
Yeah, got it.
All right.
Plus me.
That's right. All right, so speaking of which, go forward. What's next?
Okay, cool. So the G20 isn't the only thing happening this weekend when it comes to people in power. We got Bernie Sanders is back on tour this weekend for Care Not Cut rallies in Kentucky and West Virginia. And this is, again, to continue building opposition to the Senate health care bill and right in the middle of Trump territory. So what do you think? Should Republicans and Trump be scared about this?
Hell yes, they should. So random thing here that because look, everybody's got their own opinion, and I certainly have mine. But Howard Dean was out today talking about how the Democrats will definitely win the House back in 2018, and if the Republicans in the Senate also pass their health care bill, and so it goes in, obviously Trump will sign it, it goes into effect, etc., that the Democrats will also win back the Senate. Which is a very, very hard thing to do, given that it's mostly Democrats that are up for re-election in the Senate.
But it's easier if you just assume it's going to happen.
Uh-huh. Sure.
No, but
vision board our way there.
Yeah.
That's how Trump won the presidency.
So now I'm a little skeptical about Howard Dean these days because I think that you know he to some degree, he goes along with some of these establishment players, and he thought Hillary Clinton was definitely going to win, and so big grain of salt there. But I think that he is overall right that this healthcare issue is way more damaging to the Republicans than they realize. And I like that Howard Dean is focusing on an actual issue as opposed to Russia, Russia, Russia. And so that's a long way of getting back around to saying I think that Bernie Sanders' strategy of going after them in Kentucky and West Virginia, by the way, the 50 state strategy, hence Howard Dean agreeing with that, makes a lot of sense. I think it's exactly right. It's interesting because when I helped to found the Justice Democrats, they're primarying corporate Democrats, and then so they could run real tough races against Republicans. No more kids gloves, no more, oh, but my donor would be displeased if I ran a race like that. I'm not gonna go after the bankers because I have banker donors. No, no, Justice Democrats don't take any big corporate donors, they don't take any PAC money. So you're talking about West Virginia. Yeah, we got Paula Jean Swearengin in there who is breathing fire against Joe Manchin, who plays patty cakes with Trump a lot of times. So now that's not Bernie's agenda.
Including possibly on this issue.
Yes. So now to be fair to Manchin, he has not voted with the Republicans at all yet on healthcare.
He's just a little bit more out in front saying, theoretically, I mean, I really would like to work with you guys. Like, he's not saying he would support it, but he seems like the most, if there was a possible Democratic flip, it would theoretically be him at this point.
Well, if there was a possible Democratic flip on any issue, it would always be led by Joe Manchin, but it hasn't happened yet on this issue. So, and that's not Bernie's agenda in going to West Virginia. He's certainly not against, he's not trying to run against other Democrats or anything like that. But what he's saying is, yes, if we are strong and progressive, of course we could win in West Virginia. West Virginia used to be filled to the rim with Democrats until the Democratic Party became considered an elitist party, the party of the 1%. So let's go the opposite direction and say we're actually representing you guys. And the reason I brought up just Democrats is that in one of our meetings, I said, and I plan to do this, I think Kentucky should be the epicenter of our fight back. So now when you tell establishment Democrats that, they're like, oh, I do declare you're so naive. Kentucky's Republican. It'll, if we run a corporatist like Alison Grimes, who's a standard, super boring establishment candidate, maybe we could beat McConnell by pretending to be Republican light. How'd that turn out for you? Disastrous as always.
What if she held a Bible in an ad?
I think that if we run populist campaigns, obviously I think we're gonna win West Virginia with Paula Jean Swearengin. By the way, go to justdemocrats.com/win to donate to Paula Jean if you want to, or these progressive candidates. But I think we can go all the way to Kentucky. You run the populist campaign, you know what Bernie was talking about? Obamacare has tremendously helped people in Kentucky. And if you take away that option in Kentucky, it's going to hurt real people. And you can't, like the Republicans just run ads. They get tons of money from their giant donors and they run ads trying to trick you. And it works until your grandma all of a sudden loses Medicare or your dad loses Medicaid and then somebody's sick in your family. You're like, what the hell happened? Well, they took away Obamacare, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans know this. Mitch McConnell, in the closing weeks of his race, ran ads pretending to be in favor of Kentucky's version of Obamacare. Even they know that progressive populist politics actually works. So Bernie taking the fight to them in Kentucky and West Virginia is not a misguided strategy, it's a perfect strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also you got Rand Paul, right, from the right, saying the healthcare bill doesn't even go far enough. So I mean, this is how out of touch, Kentucky, right? Am I
wrong? Yeah, that's right.
In West Virginia.
West Virginia and Kentucky. I mean, so like, I've seen clips of coal miners tell Sanders, just like their mind is exploding. They're like, I don't understand how a Democratic socialist is representing me and my concerns better than my own senator, in Washington. And it's like, yeah, because we're actually talking about issues and people. Mm-hmm. And there are studies that show that the people who are going to be most affected by this, the repeal and replace of Obamacare with this piece of shit legislation are Trump voters and are people who are reliant on Medicare. I wanted to quickly show a piece of Newsbroke's video. Shout out to Newsbroke homies Kate, Matt, Nadine. That's our little small team. Because Newsbroke basically thinks that Trump doesn't know what he's talking about on healthcare. And in fact, maybe from all the things he said, actually wants universal healthcare, wants single payer healthcare, and that his voters, the people who voted for him, are right to demand that he deliver on that. So I wanted to throw to a little clip from that video. Trump actually sounds moral, like he cares. Does Trump care? Because in office, he said multiple times that the failed Republican House healthcare bill was, quote, mean, and that he wanted to see a Senate bill with just one thing.
I want to see, and I speak from the heart, that's what I want to see. I want to see a bill with heart.
A bill that's going to be a phenomenal bill for the people of our country. Generous, kind, with heart. That's what I'm saying. And that may be adding additional money into it.
Yeah, you heard the Republican put heart and money into health care. Wait, what? Is this another distraction from that other distraction's distraction? Are we bombing North Korea right now?
Trump actually promised universal health care. Yeah. So what Bernie is doing is saying, if you promised it, you should deliver on it. Well played, exactly right. All right, we got to go to break. We'll be right back. All right, back on AI and Turks, Cenk, Francesca, and John. We're with you the whole 2 hours today. I've got some hashtag TYT live tweets for you guys. Cody Blaine writes in, TYT coming back from the break with a soundbite from the movie Friday probably just made my day, LOL. hear you on that, brother. Emily Vandermeulen writes in, the cuts to Medicaid would hurt West Virginia and Kentucky the worst. You are quite right, Emily. That's where Medicaid is actually the most helpful to the citizens. And ironically, of course, they vote against their interests, et cetera. But at some point, if you vote against your interests and then you lose health care and somebody in your family dies, you might finally realize voting against your interests is not the best way to go. I hope to God that it doesn't come to that. But that is what the Republicans are threatening to do here. Chris Huck, who is part of our crew, but I'll read the tweet anyway, says,
"You don't read any of mine. Come on."
Yeah, well. Can't wait. There's a good reason for that. No, but I do often retweet you, which
yeah, you do sometimes. You can get,
I wouldn't
John,
say
honestly.
Often, but sometimes.
Ooh. More often than almost anyone else.
Is he a favoriter, okay, but then cool. Not a retweeter? Are you that person, Jake? Yeah.
No. But I believe that retweeting is much more valuable. I almost never favorite. I favorite things if I'm going to come back
is
and read them.
Is he not merciful?
Oh, right, which might not even mean that I favorite them. I just want to come back and read them. That was uninteresting. Chris writes in, can't wait for Cenk to destroy Ben Shapiro at Politicon. Hashtag get hyped. Hashtag down goes Ben. That is unfortunate. Hashtag TYT live. Okay.
Oh, I retweeted that little interaction you had with one of his fans. Uh-huh. That this fan was like, I can't wait for him to totally eat your ass on stage. And you were like, I don't think that means what you think it means. But either way.
And Ben definitely didn't retweet
like five
that
minutes
one.
Later, the guy deleted his tweet.
But by that time,
but the stain already, is still there.
It had already had that? Like 1,000 retweets by the time he realized, oh no, I didn't mean that.
I immediately regret that decision.
Yeah.
Wow, you're in for a treat. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Usually it requires a lot of persuasion, sometimes a birthday.
I want to leave this conversation as soon as possible. So, anyways, Politicon, yes, that is happening July 29th and 30th. Yes, I will be debating Ben Shapiro, and Anna will be debating Ann Coulter, Drums, and Haas is debating. I got to figure out that guy's name.
I think Chelsea.
Charlie Kirk or something?
I'm not
Haas is debating Charlie Kirk. He's like a young libertarian. So, there's going to be some mayhem there. Well, I'm actually a little worried about actual mayhem. But, anyways, everybody come, but be calm. Politicon.com/TYT to get tickets to watch all that. And yeah, I heard that Chelsea Handler was going to debate Tommy Lahren. Yeah,
that's what I heard as well.
That's
I think
super
that
weird.
Politicon is now just debates from start to finish.
Apparently. So.
But I think that's an interesting debate. I'd like to see that.
Okay.
It's not what I would have chosen necessarily if I was choosing a champion, but she's smart and she's clever and people like her.
She's blonde. Hey. Mm-hmm.
Direct matchup.
Exactly.
Blonde
direct
on blonde.
Matchup. There'll be no bias whatsoever.
All right. I want to do one more thing for you guys. Well, I don't know if it's for you guys. It's for us. So I'm keeping it real. No, seriously. Alex Drake went above and beyond, and actually in our campaign where we were raising the money for the journalists, donated something specific. She's like, you know, we were having people donate and name the cameras and the desk, etc. Like, this is the triptych desk now because of Adam Westbrook. Stephen Garcia has the camera that is actually the A camera, which is the wide shot. And so thank you guys. But Alex donated a drone, and that's actually super cool. John's gonna use it on his trip. We haven't really announced that trip, but
people keep talking about it. Like, Steve talks about it a lot, but it's not announced.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, that's gonna be a super cool thing that John's doing. And we're gonna use it in a lot of our shoots. We could have really used this at Standing Rock. We usually had to borrow one for a limited period of time, but now to be able to shoot protests, etc., with this is amazing. And she did it in memory of her late husband that you saw there, Jonathan Rhys Gilead. And we're naming it Eris after him. That's nice. The name she used to give him. She's like, is it okay if we name it Eris? Of course it is. You donated it, Alex. Thank you, thank you. So Alexandria Drake also pointed out that Jason Drones, etc., that's the company that makes or sells these drones, gave her a great deal on it, and she really appreciates it. And he went out of his way for it.
You ever flown a drone?
No,
I have not. Cool.
But again,
me either. But let me just say, let's stop with the drones at the beach. People should enjoy their day. It's summer.
Oh, God.
I know you want to bond with your son, but yeah.
Yeah,
we won't bring it.
Yeah, we promise that we're going to use it for news.
For news, awesome. Yes. And also, again, I can't give the details on the trip that we're about to take, but we're going to be making heavy use of ours there. And my prediction is that it will film the most beautiful footage that TYT has ever filmed. I can't give you more details yet, but that's my prediction.
Better than Jenk's camera? Come on, look at this.
10% better than Jenk's camera.
Okay. So one more time, Alexandria, thank you. We appreciate it. And thank you to your late husband, Jonathan, because he wanted to participate in this too. And she's doing it in his honor. And she said some very nice things about how much the show has helped her. We appreciate that. We appreciate everybody who's given. Look, if you want to randomly give us more stuff or name one of the cameras, we'll still do it. TYT. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. TYTnetwork.com/go.
So the Night's Watch is not proud. It takes what it is given.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
If I bought you a suit, would you wear it, like, no matter what?
The answer is probably. Look at this suit. It's shining from overuse. Like, you see what I'm saying? Literally, it's worn through.
I thought that was intentional.
No, it's just a cheap suit that I've worn way too many times. Okay, yeah. Let's
of
go
the people.
It.
Well, so. Way. Continuing on the theme of people defending their healthcare rights, yesterday, hundreds of activists in 26 different locations sat in their state senators' offices around the country demanding that their senators not vote to repeal Obamacare and not vote for this better healthcare reconciliation, I'm probably getting that wrong, act. We're talking hundreds of activists was partly sponsored by Democracy Spring, Our Revolution, Democratic Socialists of America, Working Families Party. It was a pretty awesome sit-in, mass-coordinated sit-in. From Kai Newkirk of Democracy Spring, he said what we wanted to do is dramatize and make as clear as possible the moral stakes of this fight. We've seen this bill, and we know that if it passes, millions of people will lose health insurance, lives are on the line, and we've had to draw a line in the sand. So once again, I know a lot of people have been making calls, but this is what happens when people actually go meet their senators where they're at or where they're trying to avoid in the last few months. But pretty inspiring stuff.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of things that I love about this protest. One is how many progressive groups are working together. And these are all my rowdy friends. And I like that they got together for Thursday night.
Smackdown.
Yeah. So not only all the groups that Francesca named, but also local groups, Wisconsin Progressive Alliance, Resist St. Louis, Mobilize Missouri, St. Louis Democratic Socialists of America. Like in the old days, or what am I talking about old days? In the current days, with the groups that are on the left, but not really that progressive, like if a Democratic Socialist group shows up, they all run screaming out of the building, like,
we're not with them.
Yeah, with Nancy Pelosi screaming as she's leaving, we're capitalist and we're not gonna do single payer yet. I don't mind the capitalist part, but yes, do some policy, yes, do some protest. In the old days, again, not the old days, the current days with the unfortunately, the majority of the Washington Democrats. When you say, let's go get arrested together because this is a civil rights issue, this is a civil disobedience issue, I know it happened. I mean, I got arrested with Democracy Spring that led this protest. We led a protest against money out of politics in Washington. It's the largest civil disobedience, most amount of arrests on the Capitol ever in US history. I know that the mainstream media couldn't stop talking about it. Okay, but it's true, we did do that. And when we asked other progressive groups to get involved, they were like, ooh, arrest, that's so, civil disobedience. I mean, I don't know.
What has that ever accomplished in American history?
Yeah, do we really need the fierce urgency of now? Can't we just take a little tranquilizing drug of gradualism? So to see all of these groups working together and rejecting the tranquilizing drug of gradualism and taking real action, direct action,
yeah,
led by Democracy Spring and our revolution, it's just so wonderful to see. Oh, and the DSA chapter of North Carolina, and the list goes on and on, and to see it all over the country is wonderful.
Yeah, and look, in the past, on a lot of issues, it's very difficult to get people sort of organized and active. There's a lot of forces trying to stop it. I mean, you will be attacked by the media generally for any kind of protest, but especially if you're on the left and you organize, you will be at best ignored, and at worst, like, you know, we could look back at Occupy Wall Street or something, they will twist everything you say and everything you do to make you look bad. And considering the urgency of this particular issue and how it is literally a life or death issue, it really gives me a lot of hope that from day one, I mean before day one, but from when the Senate bill was initiated, we showed you the footage of the activists for disability rights and protections being dragged out of the hallway in front of Mitch McConnell's office. I mean, there were people literally willing to be injured, as people were injured during that protest, to fight to protect their access to health insurance, but also other people's access. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, we give a lot of credit to people like, you know, Bernie Sanders, who are leading rallies for the same thing. But we need to see more of this, and it's difficult. And there's a lot of people like on the right, like the NRA will take footage of these sorts of protests and say that this is leftists gone wild, and this is extremists, and they're dividing us. There's all these things that could lead a person to want to just stay home and accept what's happening in their country. And it's amazing that so few are actually doing that, that they're going out there and making a positive change.
I mean, I think also it's filling this void where, you know, the Democratic leaders like Schumer and Pelosi are saying that single payer is not the issue. You know, where in fact, you know, actually, a lot of analysis is showing that this is the issue, that healthcare is going to be the wedge issue to win in 2020 or in 2018 and then in 2020. But move the Democratic Party to the left, move it in a more progressive direction. Something that we just talked about with Bernie being in West Virginia and in Kentucky that cuts across party lines. But it's sad that you're not seeing that kind of leadership from Pelosi in a press conference, just out and out. No, I don't think that's the issue we need to be focusing on. Nuh-uh. It's like, no, that is. It's not just defending Obamacare. It's going further, because everyone knows that Obamacare doesn't go far enough, that it is too expensive, that it is, was just a baby step.
Yeah, so let me just elaborate on those two points real quick. One is that Nancy Pelosi says, well, I'm a master legislator, but I have not, but and I'm theoretically in favor of single payer, but I've never fought for single payer, and I refuse to fight for single payer now. I don't know if you know this, that means you're not for single payer. I want to clarify for you, because you're apparently having confusion with the words. Okay.
Can I just say that she said even worse than that to this reporter? I wish I had the thought, but she said, believe me, this is a young reporter, I've been fighting for single payer since you were in diapers. And then it's like, whoa, you just completely, so what you're saying is, you've now learned the error of your idealistic ways. And when you're in DC, when you're in Washington, you just have to sort of rein it in, bring it in line, move to the center, and get what done.
And by the way, it's also just factually incorrect. She has not. She's not proposed that bill. I mean, if you're a master legislator, as she claims, you would have proposed it and passed it. Sure. She's never proposed it. She's never backed it. She's never actually done anything when she was in power to fight for single payer. In fact, she punishes people who deviate from that orthodoxy that she wants to put forward, which is that we are not going to do single payer. The reason I bring that up is because now there's the world's dumbest talking point, that Democrats need to do something to help the Republicans on healthcare. Why do they have to do anything to help them destroy Obamacare? That is so dumb. I can't believe the media repeats that like it's something real. But if they're going to do that talking point, and CNN and all the mainstream media is going to help them by saying, why aren't the Democrats helping to destroy Obamacare? Oh, it drives me crazy every time I hear it. Anyway, you know what you could say? Yeah, we've got a plan. Our plan is Medicare for all. And so that is very powerful. Medicare polls at over 70%. Medicare for all polls at 58%. So, but instead of running towards a popular program, the Democratic Party and Nancy Pelosi are running away from Medicare for all. Why? Because they're not stupid. It's not that they can't read poll numbers. Yeah. It's that their donors don't want it. Okay? And so when you, so that's why it's incumbent upon the people to take action.
Well, I would say that it polls at 58% with not that much national discussion of it.
And no one actually fighting for it other than Bernie Sanders and then
and
obviously
some of the backers.
Serious discussion about it. How much, let's really look at the cost, you know, because estimates I know in California show that actually it would in fact be cheaper. You know, that I forgot the exact stuff, something like $350 million that we spend. Don't repeat anything I say. What I'm saying is we got to actually look at the numbers. We should be equipped with this. We should be having these conversations on a national level.
Well, and look, I think if she was just being pragmatic, and I agree with you, I don't think that Nancy Pelosi is just being pragmatic on this. But like realistically, she can propose any bill she wants right now. It's not going to be passed because it's not how the House works. But if there was an opportunity to get traction on this, you will never have a better opportunity than now because the country is paying attention to this issue. Right. People are hyper focused on what's going to happen in the next few years on this issue. It might still be incredibly difficult. It might still be almost impossible, but it will never be more possible than it is right now. And so that is why you need to jump on this. And whether she does or not, other people are. I mean, look, Bernie Sanders is not backing down from it, of course. I think that she apparently learned nothing from the last election. If she wants to have the rest of her agenda sort of have a higher chance of passing, why not go with Bernie, who's out there, who hasn't been destroyed since the last election, who is still rising, still has people have his back? Why not use that? Mm-hmm.
And so finally, to pick up on John's earlier point, give credit to the people who deserve it. Kai Newkirk, who organized this, also said it was the people who did that original protest in front of McConnell's office and risked their well-being that inspired him. Yeah, that inspired him to organize this. And for all the other groups to agree to it so quickly, because they turned that around in like 2 weeks, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I've organized things. It's very hard to do in that limited period of time. And then most importantly, the people who actually went there and took action, and 43 people were arrested. Look, that could affect their lives significantly. I don't want to downplay that. And those people said, yeah, I'm willing to take that risk because this is that important. And it is. In the case of healthcare, it's literally a matter of life and death. So to everybody who showed up at those protests, thank you for standing up for all of us when our so-called representatives oftentimes do not.
Agreed. Yeah.